previously on Popping Collars.
So I grew up in, you know, that kind of religion, that kind of like, do you know where you're going to go if you die tomorrow kind of stuff, right?
Do you, and correct?
No, I don't.
Do you?
I imagine it'll be like a lot like before I was born. But, yeah. Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture. I'm your host. My name is Greg Knight. I am in Palm Beach, Florida. With me is my co-host, Betsy Gonzalez from Alexandria, Virginia. Hello, Betsy.
Hey, Greg.
And we have a special guest with us coming all the way from London, England. We're international. But originally from Washington, D.C., she is a movie producer on projects like Wit, the Jane Austen Book Club, Albert Nobbs, and the movie we're talking about today. It's Julie Lynn. Welcome to our show, Julie.
Thank you for having me.
This is episode 46 of Popping Collars, and our topic today is Last Days in the Desert. This is a movie directed by Rodrigo Garcia, starring Ewan McGregor, telling an imagined story from Jesus's days in the wilderness, where he struggles with temptations from the devil over the fate of a family in crisis. So, Julie, I'm curious. There are a lot of Jesus movies in the world today. So what was it about this Jesus movie that you found appealing?
I found appealing that I think Rodrigo didn't want to tell anybody what to think with this movie. There's not really a didactic intent with the film. Mm. When he brought me the script, first of all, he handed it to me and he said, sorry, because he thought it would be very hard to raise the money to get it done. But when we got past that initial conversation, he really wanted to write a movie about fathers and sons, I think. And then more broadly about parenting. I mean, I think there's a lot that I can extrapolate as a mother as well, and the mother of both a daughter and a son. And he wanted it to be very elemental and universal. So what a great way then to tell that story, right? You've got the father and the son, and the idea of running into, in the desert, a small family composed of a mother, a father, and a son, and how they all kind of reflect and refract upon each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we can look at the idea of parenthood and fatherhood from a lot of different directions. And that was a really interesting way, I think, to approach the story of Yeshua, as we call him when we're making the movie, so that really it's a conversation starter. It's not meant to be definitive or a conversation ender or a topper or a proof. It's not proof of anything. It's a jumping off point.
After I got done watching the movie, I was like, well, what a great idea to set basically what's a Midrash story, right? It's a non sort of textual imagining of what could have happened to Jesus out in the wilderness. And what a great idea to set it in the wilderness, because you can really interpret this movie two different ways. It can be an interior movie to kind of show what's happening to this character as he's struggling with accepting his destiny. So there's the interior life, and this is just a story that plays that out. Or it can literally be something that happens to him in the desert as he's, you know, walking around. It serves that kind of dual purpose.
When biblical movies happen, often they are a cultural reflection of something going on, a topic or a theme going on in the culture. So if you think about, you know, like, you know, Mel Gibson's movie, a lot of violence going on in the world, and this idea of retribution and those sorts of things, that there's a reflective piece there. And I'm curious whether you have any thoughts, Julie, about what's going on culturally now is kind of latched into in this movie.
That's such a great question. I haven't been asked that question before, but let me give you two very disparate answers, if I may. Mm-hmm. I think one is a very direct answer, which is if you look at the close of our movie, which I won't give away, I think there's a definite feeling on the part of the filmmaker that it's important to realize that we are just in a blip of history, that history is long, and we walk in the footsteps and often on the same pieces of the earth that people came many, 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 many years before, and that will come many, 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 many years after. And it's important to remember that we can only do the best that we can in any given time, and that we should always try to do better. I think there is a part of that that's inherent in that, and also in that scene at the fireplace, for those of your audience, your conversation that will see the movie, where one of them says to the other, do you think anyone from 1,000 years from now will know? Which is, that is my favorite scene in the movie, that scene around the campfire. When the devil asks that, he's laughing, like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, no men 1,000 years from now will care. But of course they do. They care desperately. But I think there's probably a less direct answer to your question, and that is that maybe in that way the movie is aspirational. That if so much of what's happening today is people staking out positions politically, in their religious lives, in the way they view society, and being immovable from them, and gathering evidence on the internet or through the news, and we get very stuck in our worldviews, that maybe there is a way to look at the movie as, while it's a throwback to 30 AD, that it's also aspirational, this idea that if you strip us down to our basic elements and send us into the wilderness to interact with our own inner psyche, but also with another human or group of humans that we might meet and just take at face value, that there is common ground to be found, that we can change each other in a very significant and transcendent and transformative way.
Yeah, and I also attach very much to that idea of footprint. You know, what is the footprint that you will leave behind? Because not only is Joshua struggling with that, the son of the family is struggling with that. Yeah. Where should I be? What should I be doing? And that I watch us creating daily this digital footprint of our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, I think often of, you know, how can I look back and experience my mother at 41? Well, it's really through photos. They weren't a big movie family, you know, and so they didn't have home videos. There's slides. But my daughter will be able to look at my life and look at videos I've done, listen to this podcast, or do whatever. There's a whole new footprint that we're all creating all the time. But is that what we want to leave? You know, what is the footprint that we are struggling to make? And I agree with you, the idea of change and transformation.
We have a very close friend who just retired. He was the rector at All Saints here in L.A., in Pasadena.
Oh, yeah, Ed, yeah, yeah.
Ed Bacon just retired.
Yes.
And my husband is also the son of an Episcopal priest from Virginia. Mm. And one of the things that Ed talked to, Ed had me come in and talk with him and with Rodrigo, with the congregation, and he talked a lot about the idea of blessing. I think what struck him from the movie was this idea of at what point is it okay to bless and be blessed? And when do you feel that you've grown into being able to bless someone else? Mm-hmm. And I think he loved that moment where Yeshua feels that he should and can bless the boy to go off on his journey. And the gift of being with that family at that point in time to feel like you're ready to give the blessing. I always thought from a priest perspective, that was really interesting.
When priests are ordained, you're suddenly able to bless people. And you were never able to do that before. And your friends line up at the end of the service and they kneel before you and ask you for a blessing. Or they stand before you and they ask you for this. And you're like, I couldn't do this an hour ago, but now I can. And it almost feels like, am I ready for this? Can I do this?
Yeah.
And there are those elements I feel in Joshua as well. Can I do this? Am I going to be the person my father wants me to be? And I agree with you. I think those are themes that I hear all over popular culture at the moment, of kind of who am I? What am I doing? Who am I going to be?
Well, and that's where that devil character makes so much sense, right? Because it just becomes a conscience, basically, for Yeshua in the wilderness. It's not this evil kind of, like, intention thing. It's this, are you serious? Like, this is really where you want to go? Like, honestly? And who doesn't have that voice in their head? The decision to make the tempter the same actor as Yeshua, how much thought went into that decision? And was that part of the script originally, as you saw it, that it was going to be the same actor, or was that something they came up with?
No, it was, although there was discussion at different points about whether we should shift it or not, but it was in the original script. And I think it was really exciting to Ewan McGregor to be able to play there are two ways to look at it. You know, both aspects of one individual or two different individuals affecting one aspect. Mm-hmm. You could really look at it either way. I think that was exciting for the actor. I think it was exciting for the director. And I think it's just provocative. And I think if the point of the movie is to start conversation again and to have people think deeply, and also if we understand the devil as being able to take many forms, wouldn't it be really provoking and really challenging for the devil to take your form and to force you to look at yourself?
I speak very much with working with young people about the shadow side of us, that not having the devil per se as this exterior actor upon myself, that devil maybe do it idea out there, that, yeah, you know, actually it's that voice of temptation that speaks the loudest inside of me.
We talk about other Jesus movies and stuff, and going all the way back to DeMille, like, there's always something different about the Jesus character. DeMille always lit the Jesus character differently, gave him more sort of backlighting to create the halo and stuff like that. And then, you know, Gibson's Passion, like, the Jesus character is always kind of above, like, all of the action that's happening. So the divinity is always sort of the emphasis. And here it's the humanity that's the emphasis. You really have a sense that this Yeshua character could very well succumb to the elements. Like, you know, he could die of exposure out there in the wilderness. And I thought that, like, that's such a great piece to pick up on, because then the temptation makes a lot more sense, because it's easy to give in. It feels easy to give in to temptation as a human. And by highlighting the humanity of the Yeshua character, you can play with ideas of doubt, with ideas of regret, with ideas of, well, you know, this devil is the devil of the multiverse, right? So different decisions can get made and different realities can get created, and who knows where that could lead. So you very well could give in to those temptations. It gives you those options.
Yeah, I think if Rodrigo were sitting next to me, he would say that he would not have known how to approach the story of the divine Jesus, that he would not be able to properly represent divinity. I think he's a very humble guy, but I think he feels strongly about that. Whereas if you're looking at the human Jesus, that's an interesting supposition to make, right? And calling out for my father and not hearing and questioning the father's love and being vulnerable. Vulnerability is a very human, it's just a very human state of being, vulnerability. And because Yeshua was human, then Yeshua must have experienced vulnerability. And so that is a place that an artist, a filmmaker can put themselves and say, in those circumstances, how might we explore that? And how might that have value for us as an audience or a community in conversation about it? What's valuable about vulnerability? What's instructive about vulnerability? What is common and universal about vulnerability? And you can only have that conversation in reference to Jesus if it's the human Jesus. You can't really have that conversation about the divine risen Jesus.
Betsy's already talked about the cinematography, the setting, the wilderness setting, just the desert, and just how vast it is. And it's the shots are amazing, you know, when you're sort of scanning the horizon and just seeing the desolation.
Yeah, well, that idea of the desert as a character in the film.
Yeah.
You know, doing some of the reading about, y'all did light anything, you're out there just shooting with the light and doing all of that. And that what draws people to that kind of, even for periods of time, that kind of aesthetic way of being, and what the desert as character, the role it plays in the film, and that moment when he's under the bush and the wind is blowing and the sand is blowing and he's screaming, that it's this scrubbing of the person that the desert does. And it almost made me think of, you know, when in Islam, before you pray, you know, that you, if there's no water present, you wash with dirt and sand and dust.
Yeah.
And that cleansing and preparation and knowing what it's done for his own people as the Jews in that 40-year time period, and this will be my time, and but what will I be like in the end? You know, what is drawing the family there to have to stay? And it, you know, the illness of the mother, we talked a lot about her, and because we both had different ideas about her And I'm curious how you see her, being you being a mother, you know, and you know, we know so much about Yashua's mother, and then here's this woman who has a lot going on.
That father clearly loves being out there, and he says as much, right? He likes being self-sufficient. He likes the beauty. He likes not being subjugated to any other man. And the son longs for learning and human interaction and excitement. He's a, you know, he's coming up on becoming a teenager, you know, and he wants to go to the city. He wants to hear tales of the world. And the mother honors in the way she lives, the way her husband wants to live out there in the wilderness. But she also wants her son to have the life that he craves. So I think there's so much, I think she is completely living her life out of love for those two men, her husband and her son. She's a creature of immense love.
You know, and that's so funny because just seeing the desert and all of that, that's such a frontier story, right? That idea of like, well, we're going to live out here and we're going to make our own way and we're going to be free people. And that sort of draw of like, well, why don't you just go to the city? The city's going to have more stuff for you. But there are people that are frontier people. Like, that's just who they are. That's right. Their way of life. And so that makes it feel very much like a Western.
Well, and then, but what does the city offer? What does the world offer? Yashua can stay out there and be Yashua, but he knows that he has to be of the world. You know, it's the same reason you can't stay on the mountain after the transfiguration. Let's all build huts. Let's build houses and everybody stay here. This is going to be great. But no, you know, our role is actually out in the world.
It's very interesting, this idea of having roots, untethering your roots, having family, moving past your family, loving your family, denying your family. That's our lives, right? And I also think for Rodrigo, this idea of every son wanting to move past his father is a huge one. That is the job of the son come around age 13-ish, right? The job of the son is to move past the father. In Greek mythology, he might have had to kill the father. In our modern day world, it's about defiance and staying out past curfew. In the in-between world, it might be picking a profession that is different from one's father. It might be the father saying, you cannot do my profession. I will not teach you my profession because I want you to do better. But that's something that's been around since the dawn of civilization. Mm-hmm. This idea of I have roots and I must break my roots. I have family. I must leave my family. I am tethered. I am untethered.
Something that I just thought of that I, you know, I haven't thought through this, so I don't know if this is going to go off the rails or not. But we were just thinking of this movie as like mirrors and how the family kind of presents a mirror to Jesus and how the devil figure kind of presents a mirror to Yeshua in this film and how the film itself kind of presents a mirror to us as things that we're struggling with in our lives. You know, what I thought of when I was thinking about the cinematography and the wilderness and the desperation of all this was a show that we did earlier for Popping Collars on The Revenant. And, you know, the scenes of, and there the wilderness was the woods, and it was a different character accepting a very different destiny, right? But it has this kind of mirrored image of like, you are out there and you are being reborn into something else, into, you are being called into a new way of being. And for Hugh Glass, that was a very violent way of being. And for Yeshua, it's accepting roaches crawling on your face, you know, and you don't really want that to happen. It's like, it's these very different kind of wilderness experiences, and yet they do kind of mirror each other a little bit.
Wow. I would never have gone there, although we do, of course, share the same cinematographer as The Revenant.
Oh,
what?
How about that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. TiVo shot both movies, so we have the same DP. Wow. I don't know that I would have gone there. I don't know. I think I might respectfully disagree with you because I think one is essentially, but I think it's a great, wow. But I think half the people would agree with you and half the people would disagree with you. I think that is a movie about a guy driven by demons and by revenge. And I think our movie is about a guy searching to bring redemption to the world. You're right, they're both discovery stories and they both push the boundaries, but I would say that the thematics are different, although some of the experience has some similarities. I mean, yeah. Rodrigo always says this interesting thing when we do Q&As, which is people are like, why did you make a movie about Jesus? And he said, he always says that he didn't really set out to make a movie about Jesus. But what he found out in making the movie and in talking to people about it is that if Jesus is in your movie, then you're making a movie about Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, there's no real getting around it.
Well, and how the natural element is treated. You know, that there are moments when I watch The Revenant that I'm like, you know, the nature is going to still be here. The snow will still be falling. The water will still be icy cold. Yeah. These things are still going to be happening as an element in the movie. In the same way, the desert's still going to be here and people are going to walk here thousands of years from now. That will perpetuate and kind of, but how are we as human beings acting inside that place in our time? And how do we strive to be? For Glass, it is revenge, and we need to, this is what I need to do. And then you're correct. I think for Joshua, it is, how can I strive to do the best that I can with the person that I am, with the task that I feel I'm being given, and to move forward? What I like about Ewan's portrayal is that it very much is a Jesus that I can relate to, and that I don't think he's sitting out there knowing what the end of that story, his story is going to be. And that he was pulled to the banks of the Jordan by something to see John. And John is with a bunch of folks who love being out in the wilderness. The Essenes, this is where we're going to find ourselves, is out here. And then it has that experience for that period of time, not knowing that the cross is out there. And what that might look like. Knowing something is being asked of him, where does that go? He doesn't know. And I find that that is a Jesus that I can connect to, because I don't know what's going to be asked of me. I don't know what the sacrifice will be. It's there, but I'm unaware of how the story will be. And I think that it's what Greg was saying, it's the humanity inside of Jesus in this portrayal, as opposed to, I know everything that's going to happen. You know, I'm just going to, you know, let this story play out.
Yeah.
Well, that requires bravery, right? I mean, the not knowing and going anyway requires bravery. I mean, I find it interesting, and I have to ask Rodrigo how much of this was conscious, but it's interesting that the devil is the one that says he can see the future. He says, not always when it's about you, right? But he says, but he often can. And then he says to him, I'll come to you in the end, and if you want, I'll help you down. And Yeshua doesn't know what that means. He comes to know what that means later, but he doesn't know, and he forges ahead in the face of it. That to me indicates bravery, human bravery, you know, pre the divine. And I think that's a reason to love Yeshua the man before he becomes Yeshua the divine, is for precisely the reason you bring up, that he forges ahead despite the not knowing.
I don't know. I was having a conversation with my daughter the other day, and she said, why do people do the things they're not supposed to do? Why do people want to be powerful? So we had a whole conversation about that. I said, well, because often we feel weak, and to feel powerful, you know, we want the opposite of this fearful thing that we hold.
Mm-hmm.
And that for Yahshua, he's embracing the fact of the not knowing. He's embracing his humanity, and that the temptation to help people, save people, is, I find, just really fascinating.
recording here, and so I want to make sure that we get enough time for plugs so that you can...
I don't really need to plug anything. I think the main thing is what I'm really hoping is that this availability now on VOD and DVD and electronically via Amazon and iTunes and all that, I really want people to see this movie. That's why I'm talking to you guys. Because what I'm hoping is that you'll tell two friends, it'll be like the old Prel commercial.
Yes.
Like, you'll tell two friends, and I'll tell two friends. I feel very strongly this movie, whether you like it or not, deserves a life. Mm-hmm. And Rodrigo and I love to hear from people what their experience of it is. And we, our greatest hope for it is that it will start a lot of conversations across the world. The only thing I would ask is please tell other people in your networks of people who love the intersection of culture and meaning, you know, people who love, if people who love the intersection of culture and meaning see our movie and share it and discuss it, then that's all we really want.
Do you have a website or a Twitter feed that you want to plug?
I do not have a Twitter feed. I probably should. There's a Last Days movie site somewhere, but really, all people need to know is that you just Google the movie, and there's a million ways to get it now. If you have DirecTV, if you have AT&T, if you have iTunes, if you have Amazon, there's no way not to find it if you Google it. So please watch Last Days in the Desert and let us know what you think.
Betsy, where are you? What are you doing? How can people get in touch with you?
Oh, Greg, the summer is coming to an end here in high school land. So, you know, we're about T-minus 3 weeks before we've got kids coming and everybody going to be here. So, but I am at Episcopal High School in Alexandria, Virginia, where I am the interim head chaplain for this year. So it's going to be a good year. But we're in the quiet before everybody shows up.
The calm.
You know, my father-in-law was an interim chaplain there for a while.
What?
John Smith, and then he had St. James Parish out there in Leesburg.
Cool.
You know, that reminds me, Julie, the old joke of there's 100 Episcopalians in the world, and they just move around from place to place.
I went to Episcopalian
school in D.C. Some...
So
oh,
I did
think, you? Yeah, you? I went to National Cathedral.
Oh, there you go.
I think I know all those Episcopalians.
You do. I know all of them.
And then I went to UVA, so half of them came with me.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah, you know all of them. Good for you. Yeah.
And I'm a nice Jewish girl. Who knew that my life would
be? Yeah, right?
It's perfect. Funny. I love it. That's awesome.
My name is Greg Knight. I am the Director of Children and Youth Ministries at Bethesda by the Sea Episcopal Church in Palm Beach, Florida. You can find us on the web at bbts.org. You can find Popping Collars on Twitter at Popping Collars. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/poppingcollars, where you can like us. You can also find us on Instagram, Popping Collars Podcast. And you know what? I started a new thing. I started a Spotify playlist for the music that we play for the show.
Nice.
So go to Spotify and search Popping Collars Tunes, and you'll find a playlist of all of the music that we use during our show. It's actually really fun. It was neat seeing who was on Spotify and who wasn't. So
you and President Obama on Spotify.
There you go. And of course, you can find all of our archived episodes at poppingcollarspodcast.com. Our latest episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. All we ask is that you just subscribe, rate, and review our show. That'll help people find us. And also, we are featured on EpiscopalCafe.com each and every single time. We love EpiscopalCafe.com. We know you will as well. Check them out for all your Episcopal news needs and beyond. And with that is Popping Collars for this time. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Betsy, for being on the show. We'll see you next time.
Bye. Keep those collars popped.